Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Good morning, Mr. Moran. Why are we even doing this? People should listen to the incomparable bonus episode where we talk for an hour about your book, which is coming out next week. So check it out. It's the incomparable 448, available where all podcasts are, without episode numbers.
I'm going to be all over this week, so apologies in advance.
Yeah.
I did Random Trek with Scott, which was delightful. We had a really good time talking about a terrible Voyager holodeck episode.
I cannot believe that episode exists. I read the description of it on Memory Alpha, and my response was, "What is this? Yeah. How?" Here, let me read the Memory Alpha synopsis of the episode you did. When pirates steal the ship's main computer and other critical equipment, Captain Janeway tries to track down the missing equipment with the help of a holographic Leonardo da Vinci.
A holographic Leonardo da Vinci played by John Rhys-Davies of Lord of the Rings fame.
Ah, yes, and Raiders of the Lost Ark fame.
Yep, indeed.
And Sliders infamy.
And
maybe?
Sliders
I don't know.
Fame? Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyways, that was a lot of fun. It's not a good episode, but Scott and I had a really good time sort of just like kind of being like,
wow,
what is happening here? And also, why is this boring? Like, this seems like it should not be this boring. But yeah, I did not watch a lot of Voyager when it was actually on. I watched the first couple seasons. And so the last two times I've been on Random Trek, we've gotten Voyager, both of them Voyager holodeck episodes. Gee, that is not a strong vein. Let's put it that way. Anyway, it was a lot of fun.
That's good. You got other appearances coming up?
I do. I'll be on... I think it's hard to tell because I've recorded things in the past that I think are many of which are dropping this week. I'm on the Narrated podcast, which is a podcast about audiobooks hosted by Scott. And I'm not going to try to pronounce Scott's last name because I feel like I will screw it up. Scott Ullery? Scott Ullery?
Scott. Everybody knows Scott. The other Scott, not Scott McNulty.
Yeah, not Scott McNulty. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. We talked about audiobooks and we talked about, obviously, the audiobooks of my books. I think there's an episode of Alan and Jeremy versus Sci-Fi that will drop this week with me on it, in which we talk about a short story by... Brooke Bolander, I want to say.
That sounds right.
So I'm so screwed up about these things. Again, I've recorded these. This is what I always wonder about this. Like when you ever see like, pressers with actors, right? They go on to talk about movies, right? You know, Avengers is out and Chris Evans is sitting there and people are asking him questions.
Sure.
And like for Chris Evans, filmed that movie like a year earlier. He has been working probably on other things.
Uh-huh.
And
well, hey, how about a day a year and a half ago? What happened that day?
Yeah, what was that about? What were you thinking at this exact moment that we're seeing here? And I admire those people for their ability to generally probably let's say extemporize, politely.
They gotta be good at it at this point.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. That's in their skill set, whereas me, I don't remember that episode in particular, the Alan Jeremy versus Sci-Fi, which was also a lot of fun. I remember enjoying recording it, but it was recorded several months ago, so I don't remember the entirety of our discussion. Right. But we had a good discussion. So, a few of those coming out, a few blog posts probably showing up next week about writing and the like. So I will be all over the internets next week.
Good.
Now we'll go back into a hole.
The Bayern agenda. Get it at all places where books are sold.
You should go to each of them and buy a copy
at each. Yes, indeed. That's the way to do it. Let's see what's going on. I wrote last week actually, and then it sat making me seem more productive this week than I actually was because I was kind of, I think you and I are both a little under the weather.
Yeah.
But I wrote last week a piece that I've been going back and forth with this guy, Jason Knox, for months now about this story that I posted, which it's a pretty cool story where literally like 6 years ago, he saw Neil Finn, who is my favorite songwriter, and he was in Crowded House and Split Enz and has done solo albums and all of that. And he was on Twitter saying, somebody asked him a question about this all-star concert that he did in New Zealand in 2009, and why there hasn't been a video of that one, because they did a video of the one that he did in 2007. I have that on DVD. And he said, we actually shot all the footage, but nobody has time to edit it and put it into a final package, so it just is sitting. And this guy, who is I think mostly an audio editor, Jason Knox, the audio producer at the time, I think, in Chicago at Jellyvision, he basically sent a Twitter DM to Neil Finn and said, I could edit that project for you. And Neil Finn's response was basically, do you have any samples I could see? And he had edited some music videos for a friend's band, and he sent those to Neil Finn. And apparently, like, in short order, he got all the footage and was going back and forth between New Zealand and Chicago, and then later Portland. I think he moved as a part of this with his musical hero. It came out last week, or it's on Amazon Prime now. Last week it came out on iTunes, and I think it's going to Google Play sometime soon as well. And you know, it took a long time, and it's so long that he's met Neil Finn a couple of times when he passed through his town doing concerts. And it's like, oh yeah, come to the show, guy who's editing my thing. But I just love the idea that a fan with Final Cut Pro and some experience, but not as much as experience as you might think, because again, he was primarily an audio editor, and he said multicam support in Final Cut Pro 10 had just come out, and he said, I couldn't have done it without that. But it is it's pretty cool that it has gone from seeing a tweet to volunteering to do it to, on his, as he put it, like, on his his personal computer and just using the internet, he is the editor of this live video release that came out. That's a pretty cool little story of a fan kind of stepping up and saying, I could do that project, and bringing it to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I feel like these days we're in short supply of stories where it's like, oh, look at this great thing that happened because of the internet.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's refreshing and nice to hear a story where it's like, the internet enabled this cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. It doesn't all have to be bad. in the Six Colors newsletter, which dropped yesterday because stupid February is only 28 days
short
long.
Month.
I realized, I was like, why haven't I gotten a warning about doing the newsletter? And I realized it was because it's a recurring event on the 28th saying you should write. And I'm like, oh no, that's not, no, that's not going to work.
You usually tell us halfway through the month. And I realized that didn't, I feel like it came a little later too, because the month is weird.
Yeah. So I what I did this time is I wrote about a thing we like, which I love it when you give me a thing we like and you take the application folder, because then I'm like, God, I don't like anything. What am I going to do? And what I liked this month was fixing things, which people I've talked about, I think, on this podcast before. People may have heard it, mm-hmm. That's another good thing about the internet is, like, I cannot tell you how many, I listed them in the story, like my lawnmower, my washing machine, my refrigerator, my dishwasher, and my weather station this week, where you can order replacement parts on the internet for substantially less than the cost of buying a new one and throwing the old one away. Sometimes not. One thing I fixed, I realized, was like $20 less than just buying a new one. But I didn't want to buy a new one. I just wanted to fix the old one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not just about the money. I mean, you and I talked about this on... It's funny, this is a big week for a parent. You and I talked about this on Clockwise, because you sat in for Micah this week.
Right.
And I wrote my piece for Macworld this week on trying to taking apart my Mac Mini and trying to fix something in there. And I think you and I both agree that not only is it often a cost-saving measure, but also, like, it's just, there's something about trying to not just treat technology as disposable,
right?
Like, create more waste and create more crap. It's like, I'm not going to throw out my whole computer because the drive is bad. You're not going to throw out your whole weather station because the rain sensor is bad, assuming there is an option to fix
that. That's the trick, though. And it used to be that even if replacement parts existed, how would you get them and how would you know? That was the province of the repair person, right? But now on the internet, there are like five places that sell the weather station part, which I did end up buying from the manufacturer, because amazingly, they still make a compatible part for my 15-year-old weather station, which is cool. But it was also available elsewhere. And, the plastic handle that snapped off my lawnmower which I've had for 20 years. But like 10 years ago, the plastic handle, that's the thing you have to hold to have it go, snapped off. And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? Do I have to buy a new lawnmower? And the answer was no, you pay $8 and they send you a piece of plastic from, you know, lawnmowerparts.com or whatever, and you put it on and it's fine. So that's a great thing about the internet, is that I now have access to replacement parts that I didn't before. And then the other great thing about it is YouTube videos that show you how to fix things. And you know, this goes true for you fixing your Mac Mini. It is true for my appliances, and talk about empowering you into being able to take control. Because for me, it was always like, I don't know how to do this, and we rely on this product, and if I break it, I've ruined this thing that we own. And with the YouTube videos and buying the replacement parts, and it's not even like turning my back on the professional repair person. We couldn't get somebody to fix it, right? So I like it when I can do that. And these are good things about the internet, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly you and I both have dealt with the folks at iFixit a lot.
In terms
of, you know, we know them, and we know
and
a lot of stuff
they
do.
And they've done those great step-by-step guides. And sometimes I buy stuff from
fantastic.
OWC, and they've got videos as well, and it's very useful.
And I understand, like, so, you know, iFixit in particular has been really vocal in recent years about the whole right to repair issue. And that comes up in Massachusetts in particular, because there's been laws regarding that. And I totally understand it. Like, I am not quite as vehement about it as they are, for understandable reasons. But I totally understand this idea of like, yeah, you should be able to fix these things. And certainly it has become harder, especially with Apple's products, like the range of things that you can fix is lower than it used to be. Now, I mean, that's basically because Apple has different priorities than making things easily serviceable and repairable. I don't take the cynic's view of they're trying to force you into buying a new thing instead of fixing the old thing. I think they're just prioritizing, we want our computers to be slimmer and lighter and all this, and if we remove all this stuff that makes it easily user serviceable, it's a lot easier for us to gain on those fronts. But, you know, that said, it is nice to see every once in a while that they come out with a product where it's like, well, they could have just soldered the RAM to the motherboard on this one, but they didn't, which apparently is the case with the Mac Mini that came out last year. That does have RAM that you can remove. It does also have storage that's soldered directly to the hard drive, so you're out of luck for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they make that, they weigh those options whenever it comes up and try to figure out, like, what makes sense for this product we're designing? What are the trade-offs, and where do we put our priorities?
Right. ATP had a conversation about that this week that I think is exactly right, which is, you know, as John Siracusa got there in the end, basically saying, yeah, you know, what sucks about AirPods is that after 2 years of using them, if you use them a lot, their batteries start to die.
Yeah.
Because they're so tiny. Like, imagine what the size of the battery is there. But what do you complain about there? Like, imagine the little beam sticking out of the AirPod was the size of a AA battery. Like, it would be a terrible product, right? It would be terrible.
Yeah.
Part of the appeal of making something, like, I don't want an iPhone with a replaceable, like a user replaceable battery.
Sure, right.
Because the reason that they stopped doing that, and everybody stopped doing that, is because you can engineer the thing to be thinner and lighter and better if you don't have to have a slide off plastic case or whatever, or hardware to eject a battery or something. And so they just don't do it. And I'm okay with that. I would love repair considerations where appropriate, but I understand that they can't always be there. I think Apple sometimes has erred on the side of maliciousness, where they've said, we're going to make this permanently attached when there wasn't a good reason for it.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, the argument with the storage on the modern Mac systems is kind of like that, where, like, there's an advantage to the fact that the T2 is the disk controller, and the storage is basically just the memory chips attached to the T2. And there's lots of benefits. But the concern there, including security benefits, but the concern there is that they're also kind of designing it so that only Apple has access to that that hardware.
Right. And if one part, small part, breaks, the entire product, you know, you need to... the number of things where, if it breaks, you need to replace your entire logic board on a Mac is pretty high at this point.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but, you know, because it used to be there were, like, a bunch of cards and stuff, and now it's this little tiny logic board that, you know, is miniaturized.
You know, that is progress in one direction, but it is also frustrating if you are a person. And I, you know, I say this with the total understanding and asterisk that most people don't take apart, repair, or upgrade their computers this day and age.
It's true.
It's not a thing that most people do anymore.
Well, and I actually don't mind Apple erring on the side of repairability by professionals and making it hard to repair, but repairable. Like, mm-hmm. I like that in the Mac Mini, you can swap out the RAM. But what they say is that it needs to be done by Apple or a third party authorized repair person. Because what they're saying is, yes, it's upgradable. No, regular people can't do it. And I'm actually kind of okay with that, right? Because it's like you can either take your life into your own hands, as you did with your Mac Mini this week, or you can get a professional to do it. But at least it's an option to get somebody to do it. And if, like with my washing machine, like if no one will come and fix it, you can make that attempt yourself, especially if you're safe in the knowledge, as I was, that at this point, if we can't fix this thing, we're going to have to buy a new washing machine. Right, right. So the worst I can do is nothing. I could break it, but it's already broken, so it doesn't matter. And that was very empowering because I didn't feel like I was going to have guilt if I failed. And the best part is I didn't fail. I fixed it. It's you know, I'm still using all these things that I fixed. I haven't bought a new lawnmower to replace my 20-year-old lawnmower or you know, any of these new dishwasher to replace the one where the racks all kind of like snapped off and all of that. I was able to do that without calling a repair person. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Same idea. I mean, like, yeah, that's the reason I didn't just try to buy a new Mini was because, you know, speccing it out and looking at it, I was like, it's going to cost me, you know, hundreds, if not $1,000 for something I can probably replace and fix for under $100.
Exactly. Well, that was my feeling with the weather station was I could buy a new weather station for $300 or $400, or I could buy this replacement part for $40. And yes, the rest of the weather station will still be 15 years old, but it's proven to be pretty resilient. This, you know, and that's what I did, and it seems to have worked just fine. In fact, I'm really disappointed because there's another part on it that is the solar panel on it is getting kind of old, and I'm concerned that its screen is kind of fogging up, and I'm worried that it is much less effective than it used to be. It's still working, but I'm a little concerned about the long term, and I can't find a replacement part for that, which kind of bums me out. Although I bet you there is a standard solar panel that outputs exactly what it outputs, and I could probably find it if I was desperate. But again, it was one of those things. It's just like, why buy a new one if the old one can still function? And I like having that approach to things. Now, I have to ask you about your Mac Mini, though, because it sounds to me like it has been a disaster.
it's still not functioning is the problem. So it's the problem is, I don't even know what the problem is. I called in the big guns, which is to say, because I had narrowed it down to a drive problem, I emailed our Dave Nanian, who is the guy behind Super Duper, who's a friend of mine, and was like, Dave, I don't know what's going on. Like, you got any ideas on this? And I sent him some Super Duper logs that I had tried, and you know, we went back and forth about that a little bit, which he was very gracious about. And we did not come to any conclusions other than it seemed like there was an intermittent problem. So probably either the new drive I bought is bad or the cable is bad. And the cable is the cable I got when I installed the second drive, you know, several years ago now. So I bought a new cable from iFixit to replace the one that I am using, because that was relatively cheap, although it was like $20. So that was like not super cheap. That is on its way, so that will be my next testing point. I will see if that works. If that does not work, I think my inclination is to return this 500 gig flash drive I got and then replace it with basically a 2 terabyte Samsung SSD, which would work with... Essentially, the biggest problem right now is I have a 1.1, 1.2 terabyte image of the old drive that needs to get restored. So I need a drive that's big enough to handle that. And they don't really make... You can either get like a 1 terabyte or a 2 terabyte.
Yeah.
And the answer is, I will buy a 2 terabyte because the 1 terabyte will be too small.
Yeah.
And there will be no room to expand. So I'll just buy a 2 terabyte SSD and slap that in instead of the primary drive and then just be done with it.
Yeah, if you can do that, I think that's the way to do it. So are you going to remove your spinning disk?
Yeah, if I have to, I will do that, or I will keep it there as just a drive for, like, you know, random storage or backup or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, something is not working right with the two drive setup. I mean, yeah, I had them arrayed in a Fusion drive, which is, you know, technology that was always kind of a stopgap measure in terms of, you know, SSDs aren't big enough or cheap enough to store all of your data. So, you know, let's go with cheap spinning disk storage, but cheap just spinning disk storage is really slow. So getting rid of that seems like it would probably not hurt. And a 2 terabyte SSD at this point, the Samsung one was like under $300. So it's, again, still much cheaper than buying a new Mac Mini. But yeah, it's it worked very well for a long time. I still don't know what went wrong or caused that drive, the first drive, to fail. Although it sounded like it was something that had happened to other drives that used that, you know, same OEM hardware essentially. But yeah, and I don't know why this current one isn't working, other than either something's wrong with the drive or something's wrong with the Mini. And I'm hoping it's not that something's wrong with the Mini, because then I really am into the, in the, like, replace it all.
Yeah. The other thing you could try is booting from an external. That's, and I was thinking,
well, it's running on an external right now. In fact, it's running on the Super Duper.
It's running on the cloud.
And everything's fine. Yeah. You know, that's fine. It's just not a situation I want to do permanently, because I'm slightly running without a net, but there's not a lot of new data coming in there at this point. That's not, you know, in Dropbox or iCloud Photo Library backed up somewhere else. So I'm not too worried about it. It's kind of limping along, but it's and then the thing I kind of always weigh with that is, though, as much as I like having my Mac Mini sitting there as like a little home server, is it at this point worth it to swap it out for like an NAS or something instead, where all it's doing is data storage for the most part?
So
I don't know.
So ATP talked about that this week, and I will say, I am on Marco's side there, which is because they all got sent from Synology. They got sent NASs from Synology at some point. And they talk, boy, that was worth it, because they talk about them all the time. So it's like free advertising for them in exchange for those servers. It's not a bad deal for Synology. But what Marco said is exactly how I feel, which is, he said, if I had to do it all over again, I would just buy some big disks and hook them up to a Mac Mini and use it as a server. And I agree. I have had a Mac Mini server for a very long time, but like I would much rather have a Mac than some NAS on my network, because and I get it, like a Mac plus lots of storage is more expensive than a NAS, which is a computer with storage all in one. But the Mac Mini, like, I can do so many other things on it a Mac Mini, in a metaphor that I understand. Now, could I be taking my old Intel Nook that I had and put Windows on it and run it as a server? I could.
Why would you do that to yourself, Jason?
I'm not interested in administering a Windows server, because I don't know Windows and I know the Mac. So I'm going to do Mac stuff. It also means that I can build workflows and things on my Mac, on my iMac, and then move them to my server, which I did. I actually built a whole thing last week in, I'm going to write this up at some point, I think, as one of my, it might even be today, because it's one of my, on Friday. Friday is for stupid AppleScript things for me. It's like, here's a little bonus dumb thing for the weekend about stupid AppleScript things I do. But I did this using Hazel, where I have a script that verifies that a folder contains a logic project. And if it's over a certain age, it's based on a shell script that Marco Arment wrote, except I adapted it for AppleScript. It uses FLAC and compresses all the waves and AIFFs in the project losslessly, which cuts them in half in terms of disk space.
Yeah, I had played around, because you had mentioned that at some point in the past, and I started playing around with that, basically doing, I think, what you have essentially done, probably more aptly than I could. But I think I got sidetracked when I... died.
Yeah, well, I've got a script that works that I can, or a couple things, but it's what's cool about that is that I built that and tested it, and I did all that on my Mac, and I used AppleScript because I know how to use it, and I don't know how to do shell scripting very well, and the way Marco built the tool was complicated enough, because Marco built a shell script where you have to basically CD into the directory of the project and then run the script, and it compresses it. And to try to apply that to something that would work kind of like on an automated way, the fundamentals of the script are, it's expecting you to move into the working directory of the project. And I was like, that's not what I want. So I took his logic, basically I took his commands for FLAC and just and built an Apple script around it that looks at a folder, walks through all the files, finds all the waves and AIFFs, compresses them with FLAC. That's all it does. And then what his script does also is rename the Logic project to like Logic X compressed. So you can't try to open it. You need to run the decompress script first, or it won't work. Because
I'll have to see if that works for mine, because I store mine as projects and not as folders.
It does, because projects are folders.
Yes, there's a project, but they're different. It's different level of hierarchy was the problem I ran into when I first tried using his
right.
Script,
so I think it'll
expect
work.
The files.
I think mine will
places.
Work because as long as it verifies that it's a real thing, it literally finds every single file inside a folder, including subfolders, and then it just compresses all of them. So anyway, I did that on my iMac, and then I was able to just move it over to the Mac Mini and set it up with Hazel, and then it runs, and that's great. And like that's what I want. that's the kind of workflow I want. And I'll put a big disk on there. I've got a Drobo on there now, but it could be giant 10 terabyte hard drive with a backup if I wanted to do it that way, and it's that's all good. So that's my opinion, is that I feel like I've always found some reason to keep a Mac Mini around. Another reason to keep a Mac Mini around now is you can pop a and disclosure podcast sponsor, pop a Luna display on it, and now you've got access to a Mac from your iPad wherever you are in your house. And if you don't pop a Luna display on it, you can still have screen sharing turned on and use something like Screens.
Which is what I do.
And use it anywhere. And it's like, it's really nice to have your Mac, a Mac you control, available if you set it up right, anywhere you go in the world.
Yep.
If you need a Mac for a minute from your iPad, like, or your iPhone. I've actually done it on an iPhone a bar where I was like, oh no, something bad happened and I need to go to my Mac and fix it. And I can do that. So I'm kind of team get a Mac server with big storage on it instead of buying a NAS. And it will vary based on your needs. But Marco's point, and I agree with it, is now that the Mac Mini has been updated, it's like even more so, like, yeah, you should probably strongly consider doing that. Get the base model Mac Mini. But if you're Dan Morin and you already have a Mac Mini to do it, if you can fix it, that's even better.
I'm confident that I can fix it.
But don't get a NAS,
because
the NAS is going to be running, you know, some proprietary version of some operating system, and it's not my top choice.
It's not my top choice, and I don't think it actually solves any problems.
I've got a NUC if you want to run Windows, though, or Linux. You can put Linux on it.
You know what? That's I think firmly in the column of just creating new problems for me to deal with. I already maintain one Linux server that I use to host my website, and that is enough.
Yeah, I hear you.
If I can fix that Mac Mini, which I'm confident, with the exception that something has gone terribly wrong with something on the logic board, basically I'm pretty confident that it's fixable. If something's gone wrong on the logic board, then I am screwed.
Right. Well, you're in good shape, I think, because you've got your external drive booting off of it, which means you could just buy or put the SSD you've already bought in an enclosure and put it off the back as well, and then back it up to your external drive. And, you know, you could run all external and it would be okay. It wouldn't be great.
It seems a little crazy, but yes,
it would work. But yes, ideally, even if you just pull the whole pull all the disks out and then just put an SSD in there, I hope you can get it to work, because it's just much cleaner and more convenient to have internal storage, and it can be faster.
Yep. So I'm because
that Mac Mini probably is just like USB 2, right? So it's not super fast.
It's late 2012, so probably maybe only USB. Yeah,
and,
I don't remember.
Yeah,
and
Thunderbolt or FireWire.
I want to say it has Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt Mini. If it's got Thunderbolt 2, I mean, if you do end up having to boot off of an external, that would be the thing to do, is get a Thunderbolt 2 SSD. If I'm sure somebody sells one.
It does have one Thunderbolt port, but it's the old mini display out port.
Sure. But that works. I mean, that's how I ran my Drobo is still a Thunderbolt 2 Drobo. It hasn't evolved. And so now I have an adapter on it, a Thunderbolt 3 to Thunderbolt 2, because I have the 5D. They make a new one now that I've been kind of tempted by, that's a Thunderbolt 3, because it would be faster transfers and stuff. But I don't know. I've still got spinning disks and they're slow. So
someone out there will know this. Maybe you know this. It has an SDXC card slot. Could you run macOS off an SD
off of
card?
That? I think I've seen people try to get that to be bootable, and you might be able to.
I don't know if that's a good idea, though.
That would be hilarious. Just like get an enormous SD card and boot off.
Yeah,
of
frankly,
that.
I just saw like a 128 gig flash drive on sale, USB flash drive. I was like, you could probably just install the OS on that and then dump everything else to an external drive.
Yeah. Actually, well, if you can make that bootable, it wouldn't be bad as like an emergency thing to have a bootable SD card for your.
Yeah, it's handy to have. You never know when that might come in useful. It's actually, I will say, like, despite not having, you know, USB-C or Thunderbolt, whatever, you know, it has a fairly good array of stuff on it for a 7-year-old computer, because it's got USB 3, Thunderbolt, Gigabit Ethernet, and FireWire 800. So between those, you can get a decent amount of stuff connected to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's the end. It's time to go. People go read your newsletter if you haven't already. I got a very nice email from a member who said that ours is the only newsletter that he reads all the way to the bottom.
It's a good newsletter.
Yeah. Well, we don't overdo it.
No.
We're
very measured.
Yeah. It's, 5 pieces and some links at the bottom in case you missed one of our, you know, one of our big posts for the month. And we appreciate people supporting us because it's tough out there for people who write things.
It is.
And so thank you for supporting us. And hey, Dan, have a good weekend and good luck with the book launch.
Thanks very much. You too.
I'm not launching a book. What? Oh, this podcast is over. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.